Principle number 5, communication with children, particularly in teaching and training. The only real way to build a relationship or to strengthen a relationship that has been strained is on a one-to-one basis. Over and over again, I find with my own 9 children this lesson being taught. When I take a child aside from the others, go where there is some privacy and give full attention, that is, be completely present, I am amazed how effective my teaching, discipline, or communication can be. But when, out of a sense of time pressure or practical necessity, I attempt to teach, discipline, or correct when others are present, how ineffective I am. I am convinced that many of our children know what they should do, but their minds are not made up to do it. People don't act on what they know. They act on how they feel about what they know and about themselves. Admittedly, it takes some time and patience to sharpen the saw. But in the long run, and sometimes in the short, it saves time and a lot of nerves, and a lot more wood gets sawed. Principle number 6, be willing to pay the uttermost farthing. Sometimes in our hearts, we know that we have crossed the sensitive line and hurt or insulted or offended another person or a child of our own. We may have felt justified at the time. They may have deserved this treatment, but from the Savior's standards as given in the Sermon on the Mount, we learn that we are not to react to the treatment of others, but rather to act from within based upon His divine value system. We are to overcome evil with good instead of paying it off. Therefore, when we hurt other people, we should go to them and acknowledge it and seek their forgiveness. This, in my opinion, is paying the uttermost farthing, if it comes out of our heart and is not used merely as a manipulative technique. I found the efficacy of this principle on my own labor with missionaries who were low in desire and irresponsible in performance. I remember one elder who wasn't rebellious. Neither was he very enthusiastic. He would just barely go along. I had him labeled thus in my mind, and for a number of months, every time I saw his face and name on my wallboard, I would think of him in this way. In the monthly interviews, even though on the surface I would appear interested, under it all, he was labeled and categorized in my mind. Eventually, I reached the point where I knew I had to take some initiative myself and do something else that might help him, to get him on fire. Once he began to open up and said something like, "President Covey, I know you have a lot of good ideas and advice for me, but could you kind of listen to what I feel like and what my problems are and help me from there?" This was a very sobering question. I did what I could at the time, but my inability to remove myself from the label I had about him was so set that I needed more time to prepare. In the intervening time, I looked introspectively at myself and became aware of how I had labeled him and how this label had tended to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I decided I needed to pay the uttermost farthing, to use the Savior's expression. I went to this missionary, opened up what I believed had happened and how I had played my role in contributing to this situation, and I sought his forgiveness. He broke down and acknowledged his role in things also. He also paid the uttermost farthing in a sense. Our relationship began on a new base at step 1, but for the first time it was thoroughly honest. What happens when a person pays the uttermost farthing? Assume, to begin with, that relationships are hurt and strained and that you are at least partly responsible. If you merely try to be better and not to confess and ask forgiveness, the other person will still be suspicious. He has been hurt and wounded, and therefore his guard is up. He will be defensive and suspicious of your new behavior, your kind face, wondering what might happen next. Only by a complete, full, and specific acknowledgement of your own failings or sin, whether of commission or omission, will you pay the uttermost farthing. The same principle applies in seeking the Lord's forgiveness. We must hold nothing back, must hide nothing, and must surrender completely and totally to His will, His way, and His power. Principle number 7, the prayer of faith. Sometimes the relationship is so strained that the other individual may not even allow you to pay the uttermost farthing. There may be absolutely no communication of any kind. Often parents are concerned and heartsick about one of their children who is living away from home and totally under the world's influence. They feel that they have tried their best, but they don't know what to do now. Many realize past mistakes, neglecting, offending, not understanding, or whatever. And they've even attempted to pay the uttermost farthing, but there is still no change. The question is, what now can be done? This estrangement is not too unlike the relationship between Alma the senior and Alma the younger. Alma the younger became very sinful and rebellious and took an active part in secretly seeking to destroy the church of God. Yet his own father was the head of the church. Alma the father continued to love his son and to pray for him in faith, believing that the Lord would somehow get through to his son. I imagine he had every reason in the world to give up hope in his prayers, but he also had every reason in the world to keep at him. Eventually, in the Lord's time, his prayers were answered. What is the main point to all this? The highest form of influence is God himself. And if a faithful father or mother continues in faithfulness, never giving up on the wayward son or daughter, but doing everything in their own power to reach them, then continues in offering the prayer of faith, the Lord may take a hand in the situation in his own way and in his own time. This doesn't mean he will force anybody, for this would violate his own principle of agency. The appearance of an angel to Laman and Lemuel did not convert them to righteous living, but it gave them a supreme opportunity to know what was right and what was true. Alma the younger didn't have to obey the counsel of this angel, but he did. I really don't know how the prayer of faith works, but I believe in the following principles concerning it. First, in order to exercise the prayer of faith, a person must be living very faithfully so as to feel inside that his or her life is acceptable to God. Second, the prayer of faith consists largely of a kind of testimony of the Lord's goodness and power and wisdom, a total commitment that his will be done, an expressed willingness to obey that will and to be used in any way the Lord desires, and the believing attitude that if it be right, the Lord will grant the requested blessing. The Lord loves all his children, including my own. He doesn't want one of them lost. He wants to reach them just as I do. He has the power to do it, and he usually works through trusted servants who exercise faith in him. He will never violate true principles. I, as a parent, can be such a trusted servant. And if I continue to exercise faith, the Lord may, in his own way and in his own time, take a hand in the matter. Principle number 8, practices consistent with principles. Practices should follow principles and always be consistent with them. This is also a principle. Otherwise, we are guilty of living a double standard, professing or teaching one thing and practicing another. Some of the Lord's most scathing denunciations focused on such hypocrisy. The most important point or principle of this entire subject is the first one, that of the transcendent importance of the responsibility of parenthood in the character development of children.